I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On today's show, you'll hear the third part of a speech given by the late, great Michael Rupert called The CIA, Drugs, Wall Street, and the 9/11 Connection. It was given in 2002, but is still quite relevant today and reveals much about the put options on 9/11. Before getting into the speech, I want to share with you my experiences in New York City this past weekend. As you know, the 9/11 Museum just opened at Ground Zero on May 21, 2014. Architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth created a brochure that looked similar to the museum's brochure, but contained information not found in the museum, such as the overwhelming scientific evidence for controlled demolition of the three World Trade Center towers. CNN and Fox News both did hit pieces warning people that we would be there passing out these brochures. I want to thank them for that exposure. There were anywhere from 2 to 8 of us at any given time from Wednesday when the museum opened through Saturday, standing on the corner of Greenwich and Liberty Streets, passing out these fact-based brochures. There was a constant stream of people passing by, going to the museum, and 9/11 was on their mind. And a great many of them took our brochures. There was a lot of interest, and we all had some good conversations with the people passing by. One of the questions that was asked most frequently was, why would the government do this? I explained the Project for a New American Century, or the PNAC document, and the geopolitics involved. I also met two men from Sweden who took our brochure and said, we already know this. We're from Sweden, and everybody in Sweden knows that the government's story is false. On Friday afternoon, founder of Architects and Engineers Richard Gage held a press conference on the street. No major media showed up, but several of us recorded it, and I'll share that with you at a later date. Richard Gage also spoke on Saturday evening at a church on 35th Street, along with two victims' family members who assured us that we are not disrespecting them by seeking the truth of what happened on 9/11. They were thankful that we were doing it, contrary to what you've been told by the corporate media. The police down at Ground Zero were very nice. They didn't bother us, really. And a few of them took the brochure and wanted to read it. There was a plainclothes police officer who showed up to monitor Richard Gage when he gave his press conference. I overheard one phone call to him from a superior who wanted an update on the situation. And I heard the officer say, there's no problem. It's not a big protest. He's just speaking. All in all, it was a very positive experience. I only received 2 negative comments from the thousands of people passing by. And I hope they'll continue to pass out those brochures. There's an endless stream of people there, and it's a really good way to reach them. And now back to Michael Rupert.
To learn more about Michael Rupert, you can go to his website at www.fromthewilderness.com. He's also the author of the book Crossing the Rubicon that came out in 2004. And so here he is, Michael Rupert.
Do you know that in 2002, according to the House Budget Committee, an estimated $160 billion more will be taken out of the Social Security Trust Fund? Do you know that by 2010, according to the Washington Post, citing the Congressional Budget Office figures, $845 billion will have been taken out of Social Security? If that doesn't scare you, try this one. The Wall Street Journal on June 13th reported that the Bush administration to meet budget deficits in 2002. Remember all those surpluses we had? They're gone. Bush took $42 billion out of the federal employees' retirement system. That's the pension fund for all federal employees. That wasn't enough. He had also taken $2 billion out of the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund. That's for people who are injured on the job and who get disability pensions. Well, that's scary enough, but you haven't heard the worst of it yet. And the worst of it is this, from the Congressional Record, and as reported by Insight Magazine, in 1999, the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, had stolen $1.1 trillion. And in 2000, it got worse. CBS News reported it. Don Rumsfeld got on, like nobody blinked an eye. In 2000, the Pentagon lost $2.3 trillion. Now, those of you who are smart out there will look at me and say, Mike, wait a minute. The Pentagon budget's only about $380 billion a year, $390 whatever it is, billion dollars a year. How can they lose $2.3 trillion? And my answer to you is very simple. You forget that the Pentagon manages the pension funds for over 2 million military personnel. It manages the pension funds for, what, another 700,000, 800,000 civilian personnel in the Department of Defense. They own real estate. They have leases. They lease. They have income from people who operate at concessions on the bases. When major weapons programs are appropriated, the money is set aside in the Treasury, but it's only parceled out on a by-year basis. They control trillions and trillions of dollars, plus they have access to it. That money is gone. It's not just that they put it someplace and can't account for it. The money is gone. And we had a case in 1999 from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, where they lost $59 billion. Now, that's a smaller amount. When was the last time you lost $59 billion? You'd know, wouldn't you? So the House called the HUD Inspector General to testify before Congress. Her name was Susan Gaffney. And they said, well, what did you do when you found out this money was missing? And the essence of her answer was, we made an adjustment to our checkbook. Where is that money going? Well, we just add up what I have just listed to you, and it's $4.3 trillion of your taxpayer dollars that have been stolen, gone out of the U.S. Treasury. We have no idea what the real total is, but it's getting worse. Now, we combine that with the fact that we have identified something called the Plunge Protection Team, which has been documented in the Washington Post, a number of major papers that pours money into the stock market to keep it from tanking, to keep the stock prices overly inflated, and also as part of a larger conspiracy to suppress the price of gold, the ultimate smoke alarm for an ailing economy. Gold has systematically been bombed in price as the Wall Street bubble started to implode. But that's not worked successfully. Gold is up about 16% for the year, while the stock market's down over almost 20%. But now this money is being just poured out. And whether all of the money that's being stolen is going directly to inflate these investment bubbles or not, the one thing that you need to remember is that the people who are getting rich have got all the money they want, and they are not going to be affected when all of the markets in the financial system collapse. And that's why we had a guy like George Soros, a member of the Bilderberg Group, a huge currency financial speculator who sat on a dais recently with Hillary Clinton, with Shimon Peres, with Zbigniew Brzezinski, with the World Economic Forum in New York, deciding how our world was going to look. And he was recently blaming in the New York Times George W. Bush for the collapse of the world economic system. I believe we're on the cusp of that. I believe in the summer of 2002, we are just starting to see all of these bubbles and all these chickens come home to roost. But bear in mind, when the chickens come home hungry, they aren't going to be eaten on the rich people. They're going to be eaten on you and me. In that context, we see post-9/11, these financial scandals getting worse and worse. Now, as I mentioned, From the Wilderness had its first economic bulletin on September the 9th. At that time, after a 900-point drop in the Dow, I said, we're on the brink of a collapse that's going to make 1929 look like a picnic. Now, in recent weeks here in the summer of 2000, we've seen the Dow drop 1,500 points, 2,000 points. Major scandals, and we have the pending revelations, and all is happening before the standard time in any market when the market goes south, which is in early October. We also have what's coming to be, looks like it will be a certainty, which is the invasion of Iraq, which could be a major disaster for the U.S. But now we have the oil, the drugs, and this looting of America all happening simultaneously in this context around September the 11th. Now, I want to stop there for a minute so that you can see three basic trends that we've identified in the world post-September 11th and pre-September 11th. And I want to talk a little bit about September 11th itself. You have heard the statements in May when all these embarrassing revelations came out about the FBI memoranda from Phoenix, Arizona, about terrorists taking flight training lessons and the special briefing that President Bush got at his Crawford, Texas ranch in August that Osama bin Laden might be planning to hijack airliners. And of course, you have to think, Never in the history of terrorist hijackings has the hijacker ever had any interest in learning how to fly an airplane. He had the pilot to do that. And the FBI report and others who were trying to brush over those anomalies came back and said, well, you know, they were learning how to crop dust. And, you know, they might have been trying to spread disease. And of course, I have a very clear question for them, which is, when was the last time anybody ever saw anybody crop dusting in a Boeing 767? It doesn't happen. We had the revelations from Minneapolis. A brave woman, Colleen Rowley, the special agent who was the legal officer running legal affairs for the Minneapolis field office. They had a major investigation of Zacharias Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker. And that was a major scandal which nobody has really picked up the ball and run with, in that the FBI agents, and this was covered actually by Time and Newsweek, but nobody made an issue out of it, but it was certainly covered by Colleen Rowley in her 13-page letter to FBI Director Robert Mueller. And I encourage everybody to go read it. It's still up on the Time and Newsweek websites. But she talks about how the agents in Minneapolis were desperate. They were frantic. They were speculating in their notes that Osama bin Laden was going to hijack an airplane and crash it into the World Trade Center. At one point in the footnote, she mentions that the FBI agents were so frustrated because FBI headquarters had frustrated their investigation, blocked them, thwarted them, that they thought bin Laden had a mole in the FBI. Now, what's interesting if you read Rowley's memorandum is a couple of things. First of all, she says, there was one supervisory special agent at the FBI's SIOC, which I believe stands for Special Intelligence Operations Center, who was like the choke point for all major terrorist investigations. And this was the guy to whom she sent her requests for search warrants. She sent her affidavits. She sent her requests to do all kinds of things. And this was one man who blocked everything that she was done. And you read through her memorandum closely, and the adjectives and the verbs that she uses to describe what happened at headquarters, where she uses words like deliberately thwart, obstruct, threaten, harass, intimidate, suppress, willfully suppress. There was another FBI agent, Robert Wright, in Chicago, who had a tearful press conference at the National Press Club at about the same time, who was tracking the money aspects of 9/11. And he documented clearly how he had been punished, he had been retaliated against, and every word that these special agents used to describe what was done are words describing deliberate and willful actions. Now, I've had some critics out there, people who want to poo-poo the truth about 9/11, and they say, oh, it's impossible to have a conspiracy this large that would have involved all of these agencies. It's nonsense. You could never have coordinated this. And I use the Rowley memo as a classic example on how it could be done. You only need a few people in very key positions to stop all the investigations. And that's the way it's always worked. You don't need thousands of people in the FBI. You need one guy at FBI headquarters who can stop any investigation that's getting too close to the attacks that you want to have succeed. And what did Rowley say about this guy in her memorandum? She noted in her missive to the FBI director that right after September 11th, the special agent who had blocked the investigation into Moussaoui prevented her from getting into Moussaoui's laptop computer that could have prevented the attacks. The guy was promoted. Now, as all these revelations started to come out, the Bush administration stood up. President Bush said, we had no idea that aircraft would be used as weapons. Ari Fleischer, the president's press secretary, got up and said, we did not have any idea that aircraft would be used as weapons. And Condoleezza Rice, you know, Miss Kazakhstan of Chevron Oil, got up and said, there was no way we had any clue that aircraft would be used as weapons. And I would come back with two small points. One, if that's the case, why did the Pentagon, from October 24 through 26 of 2000, stage a mass emergency drill and response for the scenario of a hijacked airliner being crashed into the Pentagon? If the administration had absolutely no idea that hijacked aircraft could be used as weapons to attack people, why then, at the G8 summit in Genoa, Italy, in July of 2001, just 2 months before the attacks, was all of the airspace closed down? Was the G8 summit ringed with anti-aircraft guns? And why did the Los Angeles Times report that Egypt and Italian authorities had been aware that Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups were planning on hijacking aircraft and crashing them in to the G8 conference to kill President Bush? Do they think that we're that stupid to believe a lie that they had no idea that aircraft were going to be used as weapons? If that's the case, then why did Attorney General John Ashcroft stop flying on commercial airliners just 10 days to 2 weeks before the attacks? Here we reach a point where what we're dealing with is not so much evidence, but mental health. Your mental health, or the mental health of anybody who hears this and still believes that the government is telling them the truth. Patently, they are not. The government would also say, gee, we had no way of knowing, and we have shown it from the wilderness, and it's in the old Lucy timeline, but let me just give you a few examples out of many. A very respected paper in Germany, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, FAZ as they call it, reported on September the 12th that German intelligence, using a highly sophisticated program called Echelon, which eavesdrops on satellite cell phone communications, all kinds of communications, had developed information, very strong information, from Al-Qaeda sources that aircraft were going to be hijacked and used as weapons to attack important symbols of American and Israeli culture. And this information was referred by Germany's intelligence service, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, BND, directly to CIA. But there's another story out of Germany from the news service online, IE, and this is on my website, you can see the original story. And that story says that there was an Iranian man in jail in Germany who was making repeated calls to the U.S. Secret Service. Now, that's the way they translate intelligence agencies in Europe. They weren't talking about the Secret Service that we know, but that's a generic term. Warning of imminent attacks on the World Trade Center in the week of September the 9th. That's specific. German police confirmed the phone call. Wouldn't say when the phone calls were made, but they were certainly made before the attacks. Then we look at Russia. Pravda had a story. They wrote a story like 2 or 3 days after the attacks, a very long detailed story that says that in August, a special emissary had been sent from Russian intelligence directly to the CIA with detailed information on the hijackers describing the plan of attack. Russian President Vladimir Putin went on NBC, I think on the 13th of September, and said that he had ordered, President Bush warned, in the strongest possible terms of an imminent attack. Congress just came back the other day. They had this super secret meeting, the closed door hearings on 9/11 from the intelligence committees, and they looked at 9/11. They said the problem was that nobody had enough money. You believe that? They want to throw more money at these guys. They already get $35 billion a year. Of course, those hearings were all in secret. Can you believe that nobody was paying attention to any of this? Of course not. There are dozens and dozens of cases where direct information was received. But now we come to some really frightening things about September the 11th. The first of which is there was massive, massive insider trading on the financial markets. Large numbers of put options, 4,500 and 4,700 were purchased on United and American Airlines. And basically a put option is a bet that a stock price is going to fall. It is the right to sell a stock at a given price at a future date and time. Each option is good for 100 shares of stock. So if I buy 10 options, I'm covering 1,000 shares of stock. You can buy options for nominal fees. But of course, the profits that you could realize down the road are enormous. And basically, if you buy a put option that says that gives me the right to sell United Airlines at $100 in 2 weeks or a month or whenever it expires, and the stock is trading today at $110, there'll be somebody willing to pick up that option on the other end of the contract if I choose to exercise it. I don't have to own the stock, however, when I get the put option. So if I enter the put option and I have insider knowledge that United Airlines stock is going to tank, I can have the right to sell UAL at $100 a share on Monday. The attacks happen on Tuesday. The stock drops to $25. I can go out and buy all the shares to cover my puts, which might be 10,000, who knows, however many shares, at $25 a share. Whoever's holding the contracts at the other end has to buy the shares at $100 a share, and I've tripled, quadrupled my money. That's the simple version of a put option. Now, the way you detect insider trading is not by just the number of put options, because higher levels of put options were placed on both United and American Airlines throughout the year in 2001. The market was much more robust in the early half of 2001, but it was very flat. It wasn't moving a lot up or down. And in a flat market with high volumes, What experienced traders will do is they will place equal numbers of put options and call options, which is a bet that the stock price is going to rise. That way they can generate cash flow in a relatively flat market. That's not the signal for insider trading. What the signal for insider trading is massive discrepancies between puts and calls. And this is exactly what we saw pre-September the 11th. Extremely well documented. The first report I got was from the Institute of Counterterrorism in Herzliya, Israel. That was the best analysis to come out right after September the 11th. And they said very clearly that in the case of United, it was like 4,500 put options and 300 call options. That's what we call in police work a clue. Totally out of balance, totally skewed. Somebody knew that the stock was going to tank. For American Airlines, it was a similar ratio. Same for Morgan Stanley, same for Merrill Lynch, same for several reinsurance companies. This provoked quotes from Broadband Research and from Bloomberg and from CBS News, 60 Minutes, saying, "We saw levels of trading like we've never seen in 10 years. This was insider trading at its most offensive, most egregious." CBS News actually reported that the level of put options on the day before the attacks was 285 times above normal. In the 4 or 5 days prior to the attacks on United Airlines, the put options were like 90 times above normal. Well, again, this is a clue. This has been totally whitewashed. Now, people come to me and say, "Well, Mike, who made the trades?" And the answer is, I can't tell you. But I'll tell you, in a heartbeat, within 24 hours, the SEC, the FBI, the Treasury Department, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, they could all have found out who made those trades. And yet here we are 10, 11 months post 9/11, and we have not seen one announcement on what was clearly criminal insider trading. Why? Well, just to put it in perspective also, for United and American Airlines, no other airlines had any other similar trades take place. Delta didn't. It was just those two. And I have established over a long period of time that intelligence agencies all track stock trades in real time. But just take for a moment what CBS News said. CBS News 60 Minutes said the trades were setting off alarms on September the 10th, the day before the attacks. Everybody must have been collectively asleep at the wheel, that the Taliban had destroyed to have overlooked all of these warning signals. This is just what I know from overt sources, let alone what we know about wiretapping and everything else. They knew of airliners being hijacked, and I'm going to encapsulate, possibly from Boston, involving United and American Airlines, and crashed into the World Trade Center on the week of September the 9th. Now, is that specific or is that not specific? And that's just what I've been able to piece together looking from open source material. How much more are they hiding? We know that the Bush administration is absolutely, totally, 100% lying that they had no idea that aircraft would be used. Now, there's one other thing that's extremely unusual about the insider trades, is that the put options that were placed on United Airlines were purchased, according to a number of sources, through the firm Alex Brown, Deutsche Bank. Alex Brown, Deutsche Bank, if you remember, was the firm that was headed before it was purchased by A.B. Buzzy Krongard, the man who is today the executive director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Deutsche Bank, actually, which had its offices in the World Trade Center, has a very major role throughout 9/11. A number of the terrorists in Frankfurt, Germany, had Deutsche Bank accounts. And From the Wilderness, my newsletter has also revealed that Kevin Ingram, an inside trader, a trader at Deutsche Bank at the Alex Brown unit, had been convicted of laundering drug money to fund terrorist operations just a couple of months before the attack. Now, it is interesting that all of the Deutsche Bank offices were destroyed in the attacks. That's a minor coincidence here. But the put options on United Airlines were purchased through a firm that was headed by a guy who was the number three at CIA. The Alex Brown unit handled mega wealthy clients, private personal banking clients, people who had, I think the threshold was $3 million or more to invest. Then you got the red carpet treatment. Then you got closed doors. You got special services and so on and so forth. That's what Alex Brown did. So the insider trading, we have had no information post-September the 11th. Now, one paper has tried to sink my coverage on the insider trading, Insight Magazine of the Washington Times, and the reporter there, who I've ordinarily had great respect for, documented much higher levels of put options throughout the year before, but she didn't even begin to discuss the fact that there were almost no call options, that the ratios were totally out of balance. And I've spoken with the researchers at the Institute for Counterterrorism in Herzliya, Israel, and they agree. Insight didn't get the story right. But what's more interesting is that the levels of trades have been estimated to be, who knows, it's a great state secret, because the trades were occurring in Germany, England, France, Japan, all over the place. A German official from the Bundesbank had estimated $12 billion in insider trade. Now, all of that was left initially when it was first disclosed post 9/11 that, gee, Osama bin Laden made all these insider trades. These are dirty terrorists who are trying to clean up on the killing of innocent Americans. And my answer to that is that's total hogwash. Absolute total nonsense. And here's why. First of all, even CBS said that this was setting off alarm bells the day before the attacks. I carry these two cards around with me of two members of the Canadian RCMP national security staff who were conducting an investigation in America on whether or not a version of a special software they had called PROMIS, P-R-O-M-I-S, had been compromised. And PROMIS is an extremely sophisticated software that is capable of integrating a wide number of databases in different languages. It's used not only in terrorist investigations to integrate, let's say, power records and shopping records and bank records and so on and so forth, but it's used in the financial markets. Look at your ATM card. What is it that enables you to withdraw cash from an ATM in Paris when you live in Cincinnati? Well, that's a version of PROMIS that enables the softwares of various banking institutions to interface with each other. PROMIS is used to track stock markets in real time by the intelligence agencies, and over the years it has been equipped with a back door, which allows intelligence agencies to enter various programs that are using the software that they control and extract data, see what's going on, see what's being used, and even remove data at time. And the Mounties were concerned that there had been compromise, whether by the CIA perhaps, possibly Israel, possibly China, but they were as concerned about the CIA as anybody else. And after the Mounties had left, I wrote a long story about this. I did some backtracking and found some other witnesses that the Mounties had spoken to, and guess what? They were stockbrokers. So we know that all intelligence agencies, or the big ones, track stock trades in real time. We got some other overt admissions since then. Fox News even came out with a story shortly after the attack saying that bin Laden had acquired PROMIS software. And the FBI and CIA, which had denied ever using it, suddenly came up and said, oh gee, we've stopped using it now, which was kind of a blessing for the guy who created the software, Bill Hamilton of INSLAW, who'd been fighting almost a 20-year legal battle to get paid for the software that had been stolen from him. But to come back from that long little detour here, knowing that intelligence agencies track stock trades in real time and that these trades, these put options on United and American would have stood out like blazing sore thumbs, do you really think that Osama bin Laden, who had put, what, 4, 5 years into this life's masterpiece terrorist attack, would have actually triggered warning bells to say, I'm coming to attack and I'm going to use American and United Airlines before the attacks? Absolutely not. The way the attacks would have had to have been carried out by him would have been from a standpoint of total secrecy. The placement of massive put options on United and American would have, you know, just been an absolute warning bell. Osama bin Laden didn't make those trades. Those trades were made only by people who had, one, insider knowledge that the attacks were going to take place, and two, a conviction that the attacks were going to be successful. The only people who could have made those trades would have been people connected with U.S. or allied intelligence services. Remember where we started this discussion about the relationship between CIA and Wall Street, how close that relationship is. And these might have been guys just inside at the right levels in CIA, higher levels, who said, hey, maybe I can make an extra $2 or $3 million real quick off of this. It might have been much worse than that. It might have been institutional. We don't know. The point is also, this is another glaring hole in the administration's position regarding September the 11th. And it's one that needs to be drug out into the light, because the insider trades are far and away the most glaring clue. And the American public have been told nothing. The only comments you get from SEC, Chicago Board of Options Exchange, FBI, Department of Justice, any of those people are, there's an investigation, we have no comment, period. 10, 11 months down the road, and they know who made those trades within 24, 48 hours. Why aren't we being told?
You just heard the third part of a speech by Michael Rupert called The CIA, Drugs, Wall Street, and the 9/11 Connection. The fourth and final segment of the speech will be aired next week. Michael Rupert has shifted his focus in the past few years to our economic collapse. His website is collapsenet.com. He's also made a movie called Collapse. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.